Hello and welcome to the Mobility Podcast. I am Greg Rogers with Securing America's Future Energy. I'm joined by my co-host
Pete Gould with Shared Mobility Strategies.
And in the absence of our co-host Greg Rodriguez, I will say that views are our own. So we are once again live at the ITS America annual meeting 2019 in Washington, D.C. I'm really excited for this interview. We are joined by Maggie Walsh, who is the Vice President of HDR and also the Chair of the Board for the Women in Transportation Seminar, as well as Jane Lappin, who is the Director of Public Policy and Government Affairs for the Toyota Research Institute and is also the Chair of the Vehicle Highway Automation Committee, the Chair of the Automated Vehicle Symposium. So welcome and thank you for joining us. So just to launch in, I guess, Maggie, we can start with you. How did you end up in transportation and what's your background?
My background is marketing and communications, and I've been in the industry since 1996. So I've had most of my career in the space. A little bit before that, I was in acquisitions and mergers. But for the most part, I'm pretty satisfied with this ever-changing transportation industry. And what I'm finding currently is that it is the industry to be in across many, many, many modes or many disciplines. So it's really quite an interesting place to be right now.
Yeah. And
Jane? I fell into transportation by accident. I'd been consulting in organizational strategy with a big consulting firm and wanted to make a personal change in my life so that I could be home more. It was that time in my marriage. And I was asked to join the Volpe Center to do research and organizational development within the transportation sector. And I think that was 91, at the beginning of IVHS, Ice-T, and I've never looked back. I had no idea how rewarding, how diverse, and how fundamental transportation is to every part of our life. So I've, through the Volpe Center, which is a research lab, had the opportunity to explore all aspects of advanced technology's impact on people's lives, which led me to automated vehicles and to Toyota Research Institute and our work automating vehicles and robotics. So it's been an unanticipated but pretty marvelous career.
Wonderful. And so we're speaking right before the Women in ITS panel discussion on June 7th. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, we've got a great panel set up for tomorrow morning, and it's a very diverse group of people coming into bringing their ideas and their thoughts around mobility, and certainly the influence of maybe the female perspective, and how the importance of a female perspective in making decisions around the use of technology and the use of all the shared mobility that is a major topic for our industry right now. And without that voice at the table, we might not make the right decisions. And I think that that's a strong message that we're trying to convey. And we're going to hear from some really smart women tomorrow morning on the topic.
Yeah, I think that women's careers in transportation have developed a pace with women leaning in to talk about what they know and how to work and the importance of including women in leadership positions. And so to the extent that we can continue to organize events like the Women's Breakfast that draw attention to this continuing issue, the more we can do it, the better. Before we started the conversation, Maggie and I were talking, you know, we've just met, about, you know, why does this matter? And Maggie made the point that, you know, regardless of the progress we've all made in equality and in equal recognition, our careers depend on the 80% of the male transportation workforce who are in leadership, management, ownership positions. And so bringing us all together around these important diversity and recognition issues is a critical part of what the breakfast accomplishes at ITS America every year.
Great. So one of the things we were discussing before we jumped on the podcast is that sort of in this new era of new mobility, there's a need for gender parity to be taking a front seat. We also discussed some of the differences in patterns of travel between men and women. And could we dive into those questions, into some of those issues?
Well, I'd love to start. This is Maggie, and then Jane, you know, let's build on the conversation. So I was thinking about traveling from A to B and the differences between men and women and how they might do that in the most efficient way. And so stereotypically, a woman may look at an efficient route to get from A to B is how many stops can they do or can she do to get to B. So the female may drop off the kids at, you know, some location, possibly school or daycare or a friend's house, and then stop at the grocery store, you know, incorporate health and wellness into her her trip, and finally get to her destination. I'm not sure, maybe there's some research behind what that what supports that theory.
You were telling us that that's not just let's stereotype and here's what men and women do, that there's the actual data.
There is actual data. I used to run a household travel panel survey in Greater Seattle. We had 2,000 people record every trip they made, any mode, over the course of 2 days. And 2,000 households. It was a big survey. And of course, we'd analyze it in many ways, including gender divide. And the data clearly demonstrated women were not going A to B. Men would start out, go to their destination, maybe go to lunch. There wasn't a lot of divergence from the A to B travel pattern. Women, on the other hand, and particularly women in families and with children, did all of the household travel, you know, between home and work or home and whatever the morning's destination was. And so you saw women taking, you know, children to their destinations, stopping for household errands, stopping, you know, at the gym for the health, and then getting to work or doing it on the way home. So absolutely the data supports.
So Jane, so what's interesting is that today, now we have handheld devices called mobile phones, and they continually get better and better for technology. So wouldn't it be great if we had both genders or all genders, because there's more than two now, that are contributing to how technology can actually make us even more efficient in this?
I can imagine an app where you would put in your daily routine and it would map your destinations. Yeah. You know, I'm going to get up at 6. And I've got to get to work by 9. These are the things I have to get done between 6 and 9. Map my morning.
Right, and maybe even the grocery store already has your groceries ready. All you have to do is pay for them because they're already bagged.
Who put in the order? Who made the list?
We can't do that all together. But you know, I do. But I think what we're looking at is that technology is, you know, the topic of the week on how the importance of all of our genders contributing to how these are going forward, and so that they get as much diverse input into them so we get better technology and we get better output so that our productivity is better, and ultimately maybe that work and non-work integrated balance feels better for everybody, you know, and that we have more time to either spend with our family or our friends, or we have more time to do research or what have you, rather than, you know, some of this inefficiencies that we're seeing, maybe stuck in traffic or where the low productivity is occurring.
Well, also, you know, pretty unbalanced assignment of household tasks. Earlier in the conversation.
Sounds like a broader issue that is manifested in this transportation element, but that is another conversation.
Well, it's interesting because you're talking about these are working women who are still running more errands than the working men, too.
Yeah.
The guys need to get on board. What's going on here?
Yeah, well, right. So we have this Women in ITS breakfast tomorrow morning, right, which is part of our effort towards bringing attention to the inequity. And then there's research where we do bring forward gender inequity. We were just talking about distribution of household tasks, but the other thing that women think about when traveling A to B is the safety of the journey.
Yeah, as I said, that's just not something, except for extreme, you know, situations, that really comes into a matter of like, yeah, you know, when people talk about, oh, I'll do the multi, you walk to the metro here and then take metro to this and then hop in on a scooter, you know, all these things. For for me, at no point is it, well, what time am I doing this? Am I going to be walking alone?
Right.
And so how does that factor into not only from the policies, but the role that that can play into planning and design of the infrastructure?
Well,
and the
before we go to a solution, I think we want to more fully understand the problem, and the problem is then that women are paying more for mobility. It costs more, whether it's time or money, to get from A to B, when you need to take into consideration who are my fellow travelers, what's the time of day, what am I wearing, am I vulnerable, what do I carry with me to protect me. So there are the personal costs, the amount of time, there's the financial cost, and then overall, mobility equates to economic well-being and public health. So, you know, just stack up the impact of that on a woman's life and how she goes forward into the world, then what sort of policies address that?
And does that, do the two things, this both on the safety but also on the multitasking kind of pooled trip of tasks, does that play into a factor of mode choice? At what point is it just safer, easier, I don't have to do all that stuff, to just drive my own personal vehicle versus the kind of multimodal, I can hop it around concept that you keep hearing from a mobility as a service future? At what point does, yes, it would be great to, here is a multimodal, most efficient trip, but I also have to go here, and that means I then have things that I've picked up or dropped off, and does that play into, yes, I would love to do all these things, but single occupancy vehicle actually.
So I think the mobility as a service, I think what that trend is driving is to have less of these trips that a female may be taking. And she's looking for efficiency. I think that a lot of maybe a stereotypical comment is that women constantly are looking for efficiency, not to say that men aren't, but they want to get as much done as they possibly can in a certain period of time that they may have to do it. And so in this mobility as a service space, I think that we're looking for how to get that to be an advantage. So maybe, it might enhance safety, because if you don't have to be out and about as much at certain times of the day, if it's late at night and you have different ways of getting a service done, something along that realm. Because I do think that, well, I heard two different comments that we were just talking about, safety and then costs. And if women are paying more for the cost, that's harder. And then they're also not paid as much as a man today. We're getting there, I think, every year we're pushing that. But these are challenges sitting in front of us.
And I think that there is on the safety side of things, for TNCs and ride sharing, the overwhelming majority of the regulation is focused around trying to keep crazy, violent, or dangerous people from being the other guy in that.
In the vehicle with you.
In the vehicle with the driver. There's the other aspect of they've vetted the driver through all these processes. The other guy sitting next to me in a pool
has not been vetted.
Just put his credit card in, and there's all of those issues. So, AVs, I think there is that element of from a safety side, I think it is.
So, just one quick comment on this.
Yeah,
I would say 99% of the human being is a kind, gentle, trustworthy person. Mm-hmm. Whether you're in anywhere across the world. So we have this small population that we fear, in a sense, that is so small. Because I do use the pool space, and I get in with two others. But I do know that when I use pooled ride sharing, that it is during the mass peaks of work commuting. And everybody just kind of gets in the car, we get on our emails, we get the day going, and
I'm guessing you're also sober, and it's...
Yeah, right.
So rather... Right. Hopefully,
But I was thinking work mode, right?
Yeah.
So to think about that you're going to have some crazy person in your pool doesn't really... enter my mind, because I would prefer to treat everybody as a trustworthy human being. And I think when you walk into that situation that way, it happens. And this has happened all over the world for someone like me who has lived in 6 countries. And I feel that way.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, certainly one of the things that we think about with AVs is how to ensure that they're safe.
Correct.
And we talk about tracking riders, tracking vehicles, you know, having cameras inside, having panic buttons, and at the same time, preserving the privacy of the people who are in the vehicles. Mm-hmm. So it's a delicate balance. Mm-hmm. One analogy that comes to mind for me is that in India, where assault is a terrible problem, assault on women is a terrible problem, there are separate buses for women. All buses aren't segregated, but they do have separate safe spaces for women as a way of recognizing their special security needs.
There are also separate women drivers that are highlighted. So if a woman only wanted to be in a car with another woman, that is available.
I've heard that business model is, you know, that has been pitched a lot. It's difficult to...
I've only actually seen it in other countries. I haven't seen it here.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
You know?
It would be interesting.
The issue there is it's creating a new TNC, but one of their biggest issues is driver supply and being able to match, and so limiting that on top becomes difficult from an execution standpoint. But I've never heard anyone who's not.
My guess is that there aren't many women drivers compared to men. That this is another way that gender plays out in transportation. Vehicles have been primarily a male domain, much the same way engineering has.
Yeah, and I will say, as a former Uber and Lyft driver, I felt at times threatened because I was doing it full time for 6 months at all times of day.
Right.
And I mean, so I had concerns myself, and I would have those concerns for anyone. My little brother had started to do it recently.
Right.
And I'm very concerned about him being on the road, because we've seen some of these incidents of drivers being attacked. And so I think it's this larger question, too, of how do we ensure safety across the board, especially for all genders.
Right. Good point.
Mm-hmm. So now, Maggie, I'd love to, let's talk about WTS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The industry has kind of historically had the old guys club feel. What does WTS do, and what is it? What are you guys doing now, and have done, and are looking to do in the future? That it's not a matter of tearing down as much as bringing up an inclusion and kind of helping throughout each stage of a young professional through, you know, senior VP. How do we help promote and mentor and encourage women and provide opportunities and attract the next wave too?
So much in that. and jump in where your experience has been, Jane. So WTS stands for Equity and Access for All Women in Transportation, and it takes all genders to achieve that goal. And so everything that we're doing going forward is really trying to be a diverse and included space, the organization. So one thing that as chair of the board, a couple of things that we're doing is, well, one, we're creating a new brand refresh of our entire brand. So we really want to be a brand that's very recognizable to the entire industry. And the industry is growing with players coming in. So we really want to figure out how we can be that connection. We're creating formal MOUs with other industry partners like ASHTO, ARTBA from the World Builders Association, DRB, and APTA. So I think with that, that is our connection to this included space, and really trying to be a place where all men and women can come and share their knowledge and learn, and then also have that still important focus on females gaining the professional development they need in order to be to actually build their skills to be into some of these greater positions that are out there. And we need a platform for them to be able to know that they have the confidence. And we know they have the competence. We need them to have even more confidence to step into some of these senior executive level roles or leading major mega programs around the nation. You know, one thing that a specialty that I do is I look for really big infrastructure programs and projects for our consulting teams to work on. And almost always, the leaders of those mega projects are men. And I would really love for females to step in, because a female has innate natures to organize and manage lots of things that go on. And these mega programs involve a lot of activities, very diverse activities. So it's ripe for a female to really learn and step into that really great role. So I think an organization like WTS is creating that space for this to happen. It's growing rapidly. Just for a quick couple stats for all of you. So we're up to 8,400 members. We were stagnant around 7,000 for years, and just recently we've popped up to 8,400. We have 58 professional chapters around the nation, with 10 in a formation stage. So we have more states that are realizing they don't have this chapter, and many of the agency leaders and the DOT leaders are stepping up and saying, we need a chapter in our state. So with that growth causes momentum, excitement, but also other challenges to make sure that the services of the organization are also delivered to our chapters. So
Maggie, WTS is international. What about the international chapters?
So our international space really is, it's North America, so it's Canada. And Canada is a fast-growing location of infrastructure needs. Lots of people are moving there. The demographic shift is huge. So there's a chapter on the West Coast and a chapter in Toronto, and more are starting to pop up.
There's a women's ITS group based in the UK. And there may be other women in transportation.
Well, WTS had a chapter in London.
Right.
And we were connected with Transport for London.
Right.
They have taken it and kind of built their own model. So
right.
So the North America model is challenged with a few other association things.
Who exist.
Yeah, with membership type associations.
Right.
So
right.
We do need to continue to.
You can only pay so many membership dues.
Right. And so, you know, one thing is that the WTS is a important space for 8,400 members, but we have another 5,000 people engaging with the organization all over North America that are just as critical to the success of the organization.
Right. And I think it's important to point out that among those 8,400 women, there's a huge proportion.
And men,
thank you. There's a huge proportion of women in really significant leadership roles like Maggie, where if one of us found ourselves without a job, apropos of it, you know, somebody woke up on the wrong side of the bed one day and laid off half the company, WTS is the best.
Or if an election didn't go the way we thought it
might. Exactly.
Well, that happens. But we also know, right? So that's a really good point, Jane, because this is an organization that has a network that is far greater than any other organization.
A really influential, effective,
across North America.
And committed.
Yeah. And so people do leave their posts. So, you know, today we're excited. We have 14 females who are leading the DOTs across the nation. That's significant. But they're
state level.
Yeah, so they're
like
the CEOs.
Richards of Pennsylvania, yeah. Jen Cohen.
Yeah, Jen Cohen will be on the panel tomorrow.
And at the city level, too. Polly in New York.
Polly Trombert.
In L.A.
Yep.
Right. I'm probably missing a lot of other great
10,000 other women.
Same.
You can look at the WTS program book of the annual conference and see them all.
Yeah.
So I think the point is that that we know that women are appointed into positions and they have a finite space to be in those roles. And then what, right? And so we can be that space for them to use safely. And, you know, make some new career decisions with their network.
And one of the things that we touched on when we wrote to one another leading into this were the informal associations that men have Because they're not running all those errands all day. They can play golf on the weekend. Although, in fairness, fewer men are joining golf clubs and spending their time on golf courses because a larger proportion of them are participating to a greater extent in family mm-hmm. responsibilities. But having said that...
Still blows, now, having kids now, thinking about it, it still blows my mind that my dad got away with that.
Right. And
just,
mine.
It's just,
Right.
Yeah, and like every weekend, and now it's just, I was like, yeah, I'm not asking for that.
I'd like to stay alive.
Right. I'd like to have a healthy, happy life going forward. But what WTS offers is that kind of network, that kind of association that men in their careers have had the benefit of forever. Forever, whether it's a men's eating club, a fraternity, a golf club, it's just been part of the, you know, part and parcel of a professional career.
Yeah.
WTS steps in for
and the
that.
Relationship building. I mean,
absolutely.
The difference between me having a meeting, being on a panel at a conference versus an informal event is enormous in long term.
Right. And as somebody who organizes a lot of events, WTS also offers us access to many qualified speakers, many qualified researchers, businesswomen, and leaders, so that when we're populating our panels, we don't say to ourselves, but I don't know any women at this level with these, because we can know, we can reach out.
Yeah. It'll be a great day when I don't hear that they are not out there.
Right.
That will be a great day in our society when, and we look for it. Now, just this week, someone said, so what are there big men organizations out there, you know, doing something similar? And I said, well,
no, the U.S. Department of Transportation.
My response feels like, well, men had 2,000 years of having this, and women have only been doing it for a handful of decades, you know, so I feel like it's
someone's at the table.
Right, so I feel like it's less that that's not really the conversation. The conversation is that it's really about parity. It's really about balance. It's not about, equal, like for every man there's a woman. It's about really creating what the right balance is, because there could be way more women in something than there are men, and vice versa. But as long as you have some feeling of balance and integration to...
Access.
So on that note, a lot of this is really bringing up sort of a lot of the, I think, difficult discussions have been sort of buried in transportation, the transportation sector for a while. What is it that men can do to be better allies? Joining WTS, I mean, making sure that we're not stacking mantles all the time. What is it really that men should be really focused on?
Being mindful, mm-hmm. looking around to see who's with you, mm-hmm. and ensuring that when you look around and see that there are only men at the table, that you lean forward and say, we need to increase our diversity.
Mm-hmm. What I love to say about that very, very topic is that some people look at, there's six chairs around the table and they're all men. And people say, well, a man has to leave the table for a woman to come in there. Well, guess what? Add another chair.
Yeah.
Add six more chairs and put six females at the table. Right. If you think about it, you know, 1,000 years ago or 100 years ago, there were boards of directors that were being created, and they probably only had five or six members on their board of directors. Well, today there will be boards of directors that are 40. Mm-hmm. And so I think to get away from a mindset that it's not about what you take away to make space for people to come into the table. It's about adding. I think we all have, this industry specifically is growing so much. There is so much need that we are silly if we don't have an open mind to say everybody's valued and needs to be at the table.
One other, so I know this is transportation, we are addressing or are trying to address the transportation industry specific, but gender imbalance and lack of diversity is an issue that many sectors face, if not all, in particular the tech sector. And as technology and technology companies are so, you know, all of these things we talk about on the podcast, all these exciting technologies, are software being written by a human being. And so that same lack of perspective and diversity that we talk about here very much goes into who is literally programming how that robot thinks. When I talk with technology companies, there often is a, yeah, we need diversity, and the they're not out there kind of thing. How can or what role can WTS play in terms of saying, here they are, you know, so that they're a tech company, you said, okay, would you like diversity? Here's a lineup of rock star engineers, software engineers, hardware engineers, planners, programmers, all of that, that it's kind of, there is no excuse. Here is your rock star talent pool.
Do you have a comment?
I do. We're a tech company.
So do I.
Yeah. You know, we're a tech company. We're automating vehicles, building robots. You know, we are fully and 100% in the AIs. We're entirely in the AI space, and it's a purposeful, explicit commitment to diversity and to balance. We have women recruiters. We have people of color recruiters. We go to all of the traditional resources. We go to the universities, and we say it out loud. We want diversity. And in doing that, we authorize it. We make it legitimate. We make it clear. We encourage women to come in. We encourage people of color. So that's one way to act on it.
Well, California has passed a rule to put females on their boards of directors. So there is a policy level that can support this action to actually take place. Because sometimes rules do need to be put out there for people to follow. Mm. And if it's not a rule, it won't be followed. Sometimes we may have to put that discipline into the space. And WTS is not an advocacy type of organization. We don't go to the Hill and do that. But we will offer people and a network who can help do that and partner with the organizations that do that as their mission of what they do. So. You know, it's an important piece that, so technology, we need to continue to hit the middle schools and high schools and let them know that all students are capable and can have this as their career choice going forward. There are a lot of programs out there that we could tap into. So, at WTS, we have Transportation U. It's a program stemmed out of the USDOT. It connects into the STEM programs that start in the middle schools and go into high schools. And we want to be connected. And we know research is showing that girls they deviate from the math and science at a certain age, somewhere like around 10 or 12. So that's the target age to say, no, stay with it. You know, it's almost like working out, right? And you're like at that point where it really hurts and you want to quit. If you just finish the workout, you feel so amazing afterwards. Right. It's almost the same thing. You have to work out your brain, you know, and go through that hard math problem or get through that science, you know.
And it's a cultural thing,
yeah.
Too, that having high profile, successful, awesome, you know, women in technology and STEM positions says this is totally cool, this is okay,
right.
And you can do this. And what, like, who are you saying, oh, that's not for girls, you should be doing X?
And there's another cultural prejudice working against young women who are often raised to be perfect. I don't know if you had sisters. Ballet is one of the areas that little girls give, you know, have to be perfect. And so you come up against something like math or science, and you're not perfect. And the feedback is kind of hostile. Girls don't do this. And so it's much easier to drop out than to tolerate that I'm not going to be perfect, but I'm going to be good. And I'm going to be good enough, as good as that boy sitting next to me, and I'm going to compete.
Yeah.
Which is another women's value that is, we've got to all confront. Competition is good, and it's good for women. So just to
I'm excited
that.
To take the words diversity and inclusion and make it less of like this thing over here on the side, and that it's just ingrained in all of us. So parents, you know, when they're raising their children, that they give all the opportunities, and they kind of also begin to self-reflect a little bit about how the things that they say themselves and what they might say out on the soccer field or what they might say in school or how you're doing your homework or what have you, and that there's a little bit more self-reflection in that diversity and inclusion mindset. But that takes, you know, some discipline. And sometimes,
discipline, self-awareness, intent, commitment.
Yeah. I would see people who are getting involved in organizations like WTS or even ITS America and certainly attending these panels like tomorrow with the breakfast, they are conscious and they are consciously choosing to be a part of this conversation. So if we could just spread that space of wanting to be conscious and learn, you know, to so that we can do the right things.
What she said.
Yeah. Well, this is excellent. I'm hoping we'll post this before the breakfast, but if not, and so if anyone is still able to, and would like to attend, that would be great. But more importantly, how can anyone listening, male or female, want to join and participate and help and be part of WTS?
To check the website and go to their state to find out a chapter and then connect with the president of that chapter. It's the easiest way to do it. Or, you know, send a message to membership@wtsinternational.org and get involved that way.
And I'd like to put in a plug for the research community and for women in the transportation research community, particularly the TRB groups, Transportation Research Board, to go to trb.org. and put in search term women, because there are both specifically women's transportation issue research committees as well as women in transportation research groups. So in the research space, not only do we need to do great work, but we also need to do self-aware work, bringing forward these kinds of data that illuminate the economic impact of unequal transportation services, you know, on women, but broadly on society when you disadvantage a significant proportion of the population. So that would be trb.org and search term women.
Great, and we'll put that in the show notes so everyone can access it. Also put links on our website so everyone can find that.
And just the last plug for tomorrow's breakfast, if we could just let you know who's going to be participating that panel, we'd love to tell you. So in addition to Jane and myself, we have Secretary Jennifer Cohen from Delaware. We have Jennifer Mitchell. She's the director of the Department of Rail and Public Transportation for Virginia. Lindsay Parker is the Chief Technology Officer for the DC government right here with Mayor Bowser. And we have Sherry Lynn Pasco. She's the professional staff of the Senate Commerce Committee. And we're really looking forward to a great conversation tomorrow morning.
Thanks.
Come and join us.
Excellent.
Great. And so, Jane and Maggie, how can people find you online? Are you on Twitter? And how can they track your work?
LinkedIn is the, you're right.
So find Jane Lappin on LinkedIn, we can post the link to you.
Same with Maggie.
Yep.
Great, we'll post the links there. Pete, where can we find you online?
On LinkedIn, but also on Twitter, at @SharedMobilitySS.
Great, and I am at @AVGregar, and you can also follow Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast, and find us our website, mobilitypodcast.com. Jane and Maggie, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.